We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. And was that Looney Tunes enough for you? Wow. LSU pulls off a wild one in Hoover. And with that, about 21 minutes behind schedule, we kick off Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. With that outcome, I don't think anybody will mind our tardiness on B2BS. Ben Love and the famous Clint D with you until 6:35. And if you think this isn't the place to be, not just the Tap Room River Ranch, where I'm at today and every Thursday, but if you think B2BS today isn't prime territory, you might want to think again. This will be the first time in 4 years, just about. Sunday, CD, will be 4 years of us doing the show together. First time I can remember. We're going to be sandwiched right smack dab in the middle of LSU baseball and Astros baseball. So much to get to today. I'll lead off with my thoughts on LSU winning in Hoover and, I believe, securing a spot for a regional bid. They'll be in the top 16, I feel, after this. Again, I'll expound, go a little further for you, but between now and 6:35, we have a lot to get to, a lot of great guests as well. I'll share those with you momentarily. But that was insanity. LSU comes from behind after wasting a Landon Marceau gym and wins 4-3. If you didn't watch it, if you didn't just hear it from Chris Blair, how would I describe the winning, I don't know, runs to you? A lost wild pitch in the dirt that was kicked by the catcher toward his own dugout. And then when he tried to throw it back to the pitcher to get out number or to get the first runner, he not only didn't get him, it was errant, and the second runner scored. I don't know if that was sufficient, but that's what happened. It was wild. LSU won a game in maybe the most bizarre way I've seen in a long, long time. If you go watch your little boy, your little girl play Little League, it had that type of feel to it. And so Auburn somehow, some way, coughed that one up. And an interesting stat, LSU now 12-5 in one-run games this season. It means two things. One, they've played a lot of them. But two, more often than not, they find their way to winner's lane in these types of affairs. And so we'll continue to react to it throughout hour number one in our entire show. But know this, the ramifications. LSU will now advance. Tomorrow at around 6:30, they will play whoever loses late night tonight at a Mississippi State and Vandy. You should root as hard as you can for Mississippi State. They're not going to have quite the depth of pitching. They're not going to be quite as good as Vandy, although both the Bulldogs and the Commodores feel pretty darn locked in as national seeds. So what does that mean? LSU has a chance to maybe improve its lot in life. Now it's about something different. I feel as if that home regional has been locked up. I told you, two wins in Hoover will do it. I believe they've accomplished that feat. What are you jockeying for now? Moving from 16-15 to, who knows, 14-13. Maybe you get a couple more wins, 12 or 11. And then the quality of teams that come to you won't be quite as hellacious. And so LSU jockeying for the best pole positioning that it can get. And I'll tell you one other big takeaway. There are a lot of them from what we just witnessed in Hoover. The biggest one is this. Landon Marceau, after a 30-pitch first inning, was spectacular. His final line, 6 2/3, gave up two runs, but neither was earned. Only 7 hits and 5 strikeouts. Marceau was dazzling. He will be your rubber match pitcher. He will be your back up against the wall pitcher in the regionals, and if they get there, the supers. Landon Marceau is the best thing that this team has going right now on the mound, at least to start. Because the other thing we learned, after a resilient LSU team played until 3 a.m. last night and started at, what, noon? 12:30, whatever it was today. I mean, they barely had any time to sleep, eat, hardly even blinked. What we learned is this. After that 17-inning affair in which Beck, Hess, heck, even Hilliard looked darn good in relief of Eric Walker, who wasn't up to his best, I think your takeaways leaving Hoover, even if it all ends tomorrow, Beck, Hess, Fontenot, Hilliard, Peterson, and especially Marceau look pretty darn good and look ready to go. And from there, you'll see what you can get out of the other two projected starters. Eric Walker, again, not great last night, but they're hopeful that they can get even more out of Cole Henry, who began this whole thing for them and is kind of ramping his way back up. And so suddenly, the pitching's in a place where it's not too shabby, and they might just be able to make a run once they get to regional play. But that's future talk. I'm a little more interested in what they might be able to do the rest of the way in Hoover. Again, a wild ending, as wild an ending as you will see, as LSU beat Auburn today 4-3. Tomorrow they'll draw either Mississippi State or Vandy. It will be an elimination game. I'll give you the heads up right now. We're going to have the Astros Red Sox on the game tomorrow. And so go ahead and program it in. LSU and either Mississippi State or Vandy around 6:30 p.m. You're going to be able to hear it on the rewind. That's 97.7 FM, 1330 a.m. in Lafayette, 104.1 in Lake Charles. And so a lot of big takeaways. I think the pitching is the biggest one. But how much longer can they play in this tournament? I'll ask you that question on the other side. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're coming right back in to the Tap Room River Ranch on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station,
and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Back in and ready to talk more baseball with you. In fact, we've got some developments, or at least Paul Mineri's talking after LSU's crazy win over Auburn. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. I told you we would return, and we have here at the Tap Room River Ranch. Glad to have you on 103.7 The Game. Quick, some developments, then we're getting out to take some of your calls. Paul Mineri, when asked who they're going to throw tomorrow, LSU will stay in the loser's bracket. About 6:30, they'll take on either Mississippi State or Vandy. And Paul says, no idea. We are a tired staff. He was also asked if he thinks that Saul Garza would have made it around second. Don't forget, first there was the single from DiGiacomo. Then Saul Garza, heads-up move there, pinch running with Drew Bianco. So the question has come through, what if he had left Garza in? Would he have made it around on that wild pitch that was kicked, booted, thrown every which way? Paul said he doesn't believe so. I would tend to concur there. All right, let's get some of your reaction. LSU with a wild win over Auburn. They did it in football this year. Now they have done it in baseball. In fact, they've taken 3 of 4 from the War Eagle / Tigers / Plainsmen all in the last couple of weeks. Here we go to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, welcome in. Let's talk a little LSU baseball.
All you can think of is wow. That's the only adjective. Well, you could put another adjective in front of that one, but wow. Chris Blair, that dude, he could probably call a funeral.
Well, we might not ask him to do that, but you're right. If called upon, he probably could.
I mean, the call on the game, I was listening to it on the radio. I was driving through Hell's Kitchen. I slowed down because when he was talking and then the first run came across and then the second run was coming around, I paused and I didn't give a crap about anybody behind me. I was screaming touchdown, you know, even though it's not football, but that dude can call a freaking game.
Yes, he can. And for my money, baseball is his best sport. I got to hear it as well. He was in fuego for that final call. So kudos to Chris Blair, and LSU moves on. It's just something they do this time of year, Frank.
Well, that's why they call them the cardiac cats, Ben. It's an all-around thing, but the player of the game has to be Marceau. It doesn't matter what offensive production came out. I mean, that kid was throwing gems.
Yes, and look, here's the thing. I'll get to his performance in a moment, but again, he's part of several bricks in the wall, I would say, that you've reinserted into the wall. Marceau, Beck, Hess, Fontenot, to an extent, Hilliard, certainly Peterson. Every guy I just named got extended runs so far this week, has gained confidence and pitched well. That's what you need heading into regional play, especially now that it looks like it'll be at the box, Frank.
Yeah, hopefully.
I feel pretty good about it right now. Thanks for the call, my man.
Too easy, Ben.
Easy money. It's like stealing with me and Frank. We got time for you as well. 706-0111. Now, I said that this is just kind of what LSU does this time of year. I mean, literally this week. Sometimes they keep it going into regionals, supers, maybe even the College World Series. But specific to this week, I want you to consider the stat that I'll feed you here. It's courtesy of Glenn Gilbo. That reminds me, I haven't given you today's guest list yet. Glenn will be with us in a little less than 2 hours. Nah, I'll get there in a minute. But this is fantastic. According to Gilbo, this now marks the eighth straight year that LSU, under Maneri, has won at least two games in the SEC tournament. That is stupefying when you consider the level of competition. And I always bring it back to this common denominator. When my wife asks me the same question she always does about a sporting event where she doesn't know any of the teams, the players, the coaches, she always says the same thing. Why do we care? She doesn't mean it sarcastically. She just really wants to know. From somebody who doesn't know about sports, why is this important? And so, you know, what I would tell you is, why do we care? LSU this time of year is always white hot. It means that they pride themselves pretty well for a run beyond this tournament. It also means that they find a way to get past some pretty darn good teams. And so, you know, if I were to use that question for today, LSU beating Auburn, why is that important? Why do we care? All right, a few reasons. One, I do believe it's solidified a home regional. Two, it puts you in a position where you might just take on Mississippi State tomorrow, and I think that's a winnable game for LSU. Depends on who the pitching, you know, rotation is going to be, who's available. If it's Chase Costello and whoever else still has some meat left on the bone, you might even think, I'm not sure if it's been enough time. Maybe you could squeeze another inning or two out of Cole Henry, but probably not. I have no idea. But what I do know is this. It's important because I think you're going to be home now next weekend. You've got a chance to advance even further, and once you start winning in tournament play, that's a nice habit that usually pays itself forward. But third, you've gained an awful lot of confidence as well. These players are doing it at the plate. Certainly the pitchers I mentioned are too. And so I think that it's threefold, if not more, why this was important for LSU. Quickly, I'll get to our guest list, and then that's the 4 o'clock hour. Even if it's sawed off and started late, I got a question that I need to ask you. It's tradition, damn it. But to that guest list first. At straight up 5 o'clock in about 20 minutes, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. Soon, there will be a meeting of the higher-ups in the SEC. They do it at Destin every single year. And one of the big topics, booze in football stadiums. I know that you're going to want to know more about that. So we'll have Ross Dellinger to explain it at straight up 5 o'clock. That means we push Jeff Horchek back. He will be here live for 30 minutes, in fact, but this time around from 5:30 to 6 o'clock. Only a few more weeks of our buddy Horchek here in the Hub City before he moves to Monroe. Come out and see him if you get a chance today. He'll be with us 5:30 until 6. And at 6:15, live from Hoover, hopefully he'll be done filing his story by then, Glenn Gilbo of the Daily Advertiser. All right, that's the guest list. CD, how about a little music? Then I'll get to the question. Exciting and new. Your sink or swim question of the day. Will LSU win the 2019 SEC tournament? Give us a call. Let us know. 706-0111. Clint, you get to lead us off.
You know what, Ben? I'm going sink here, largely because I feel like there's just one reason only. It's hard to kind of keep things up with the amount of pitching staff. They're tired as all get out. They've pretty much exhausted most of their bullpen. So I'm going sink here, and also the fact that the way their bracket's set up, they're going to be playing tomorrow against the loser of Mississippi State and Vandy, two of the best teams in the SEC. No matter who you're going to be matching up against, it's going to be a tough matchup between those two teams regardless.
I think they've got a chance to win tomorrow. I don't think that's completely out of the realm, but I don't think they win the entire thing. So I am going to sink on this one, but I don't think it's a bad thing. In fact, everything from here on out is Lonyap. I mean, I look at it as nothing but a some positive that's been taken out of Hoover. It all just depends on where the ball lands, so to speak. It all depends on who they draw now. And if these arms that have gained confidence in the case of Cole Henry maybe have come back to form and regained some arm strength, if everything kind of aligns the right way, then I think this weekend will be nothing but a some positive that might just push them into and through regional play. I said it a few weeks back that I thought LSU, if they hosted a regional, would get through to a super. From there, not so sure. But I'm going to tell you right now, nobody's going to want to see LSU in postseason play, especially an LSU team that's starting to get healthy and right on the mound. So I am going to sink. I don't think they win the SEC tournament. I do think they might win tomorrow, but that probably for me would be the end of the line. From there, I think they tuck tail, head back to Baton Rouge, and get ready for regional play. Now, we have gotten some more that has spilled out of Hoover as far as the pitching arrangements for tomorrow. According to James Moran, Maneri ruled out any chance of Zach Hess, Matt Beck, Mikhail Hilliard, or Cole Henry pitching tomorrow. So there you have it. Cole Henry is one of the ones I speculated on. He will not be available. Maneri did go on to say, "We might pick names out of a hat." That's as good a method as any. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dusty, how are you on a Thursday?
Yeah, so in regards to LSU winning the SEC, I'm all about it. I think they're hot at the right time. I'm actually leaving Baton Rouge right now from law school, and the Kodiak Cats are going to win it all. They're going to beat Mississippi State, and they're going to beat Vandy twice.
I like it. The confidence from Dusty. And he's got a little bit of that Baton Rouge mojo coming back across the basin. Dusty, travel safe. Thanks for the call.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Keep them coming. We got time for more. 706-0111. Clint and I are doubting Thomas's when it comes to LSU winning the entire SEC tournament. In the 2019 world that we occupy, that probably makes us haters. I don't think we are. But realistically, I'm not sure they win the entire thing in Hoover. I'm not sure that the arms going forward are going to allow for that. And now, obviously, Hoover more directly kind of simulates the College World Series than either of the two steps in between, regionals and supers. It's just because of the length, right, and the amount of games that you might have to play. So the possibility that you go to Omaha and, I mean, hell, you might play six, seven, I think possibly even eight games. And so then you really need just not just an abundance, you need a stupid abundance of arms once you get to Omaha and you fight that uphill battle. But what's important to me is I feel better now about LSU's chances of winning series where they're going to play somewhere between two and four games. And that is what's coming the next couple of weekends. So I don't know that they win it all in Hoover, but I like the way they position themselves, quite suddenly, I might add, heading into regional play, which I think you can book now. It'll be in Baton Rouge. All right, where there is good, there is bad. It's kind of the yin and yang of things. LSU wins a wild one today. Their tournament life, at least the SEC tournament, in Hoover continues. UL dropped one to Troy today, and it'll be the final game for Tony Robichaux and the Cajuns this season. Cajuns trailed 10-3 after 7. They made a sporting event out of it late and fell ultimately 10-7. And so the Cajuns finished the year with a final record of 28-31. On the other side of this break, we can discuss what that means or doesn't mean for Tony Robichaux, because I think there will be wildly different opinions there and we can keep talking a little LSU baseball. Don't forget Ross Dellinger coming aboard to lead off our 5 o'clock hour. You are tuned in to Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
To the show.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at
103.7 The Game.
Nine minutes until 5 o'clock. Here we go, back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're live at the Tap Room River Ranch and, of course, broadcasting on 103.7 The Game. Ross Dellinger, Jeff Horchak coming up in hour number two. We still got time we can hear for you right now. 706-0111. And we'll go a bit split screen here. Two different topics. Same sport, college baseball. LSU wins today. They'll take on either Mississippi State or Vandy tomorrow. About 6:30, the first pitch from Hoover. Do you think they can win that? And then do you think they continue to roll in the SEC tournament, even down most of their quality arms? Let me know what you think there. Can they win the whole thing? That's been your sink or swim question of the day. But I'll add another. The Cajuns have one of the most iconic coaches in the country, especially at the Power 5 level. And for somebody to build up a program like Tony Robichaux has at UL. You know, we talk all the time about the PMAC, and I call it the house that Pete built. Make no mistake about it, Teague Moore Field at Russo Park is the house that Tony built. Yes, a lot of star players have come through, but probably nobody bigger than the coach. Probably no influence bigger than the coach. And a guy who is renowned as one of the best pitching minds in all of college baseball, who deserves to be right up there on, I guess you would say, the Mount Rushmore of Power 5 coaches, but still has helped UL at times to punch through that glass ceiling and make a dent in the biggest of college baseball circles. But I don't know that any of that has happened lately. And I wonder if you think that's something that might land him on the hot seat, not now, but if next year goes in a similar direction. Because I know one thing, since I moved to Lafayette, the thought of a Raging Cajun baseball team finishing a season at 28-31, that hasn't exactly crossed my mind. And so I'm wondering, do you think that this season brings him closer toward less certainty? I'll put it that way. I don't do hot take radio for the sake of doing it. That's never been my MO. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, should he be fired now? Should he be fired in 12 months? I don't operate that way. But I think there are realistic conversations that could be had about the future, the direction it's heading, if the recruiting is up to snuff, and how do you get the results back to where they were? Because one thing I do know, I think a lot of people, fans, onlookers for the program, looked at UL as an entire athletic department when Scott Farmer was ousted, and subsequently Dr. Brian Magrin and company came in, the Mizzou militia took over. I think a lot of people kind of had the thought, you know what? Baseball and softball are nationally recognized. If you could find a way to get football up to that level consistently, basketball, need to raise that level a little bit, but if you could just find a way to have the others reach where baseball and softball are, you can make a jump to another conference. I'm not sure about some of those conversations anymore. I'm not sure about moving into another conference, how quickly that might happen. But I'm definitely not sure about the whole part of, you know what, baseball is that new gold standard within the athletic department. It is softball, and then everything else is doing some chasing. That's the way I see it. Because since I moved to Lafayette in November of 2015 or thereabouts, it hasn't exactly been the gold standard, not just on campus, but within the Sun Belt. And I think that has been one of the expectations for quite some time. Compete to win the Sun Belt year after year. Be in the field of 64 and then see if you can make some of the big boys pay. And that hasn't exactly been the reality in the last couple of years. So I wonder, with today's loss, end of a season for Robe and Company in Conway, South Carolina, what comes next? I don't think that it's quite as definitive as everybody might like to believe. All right, enough of that. That's a bit of the bad news from today. The good news is one of the craziest baseball finishes you'll ever see. Giovanni DiGiacomo. I distinctly remember discussing him with James Moran while calling basketball games in high school arenas about, what, 3 months ago, 4 months ago? One of the sweetest names maybe of all time. Well, he scored first. After that, pinch runner Drew Bianco scored second. And LSU on more or less a two-run error via a wild pitch that was scooted, booted, thrown, and whatever other adjectives you can come up from that are on a Waffle House menu. Scrambled? I don't know. They messed it up every way they could, Auburn. And they gave LSU at the end a 4-3 victory. Biggest takeaways for me, Todd Peterson with a win in relief. He threw 17 pitches. That's all it took to get through an inning of two-thirds. 17 pitches, 15 of them were strikes. Todd Peterson rolled at the end. Landon Marceau was straight fire and locked it at the beginning. And the list of LSU pitchers who are healthy and on seems to be longer than the list that are injured and off. It's been a long time since we've been able to say that. If it persists into next weekend, whoever's coming to Baton Rouge, and I do think it'll be hosted there, I think they're in for a world of hurt. All right, enough of an abbreviated hour number one. Let's put it to bed, CD, with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Rest. And, of course, there is no rest for the weary. Great quote after LSU's game today. Paul Maneri admits that he was in an elevator with Landon Marceau late last night after the Tigers lost in 17 innings, somewhere around 3 or 4 a.m., said he looked at Landon and said, you know, I probably should have sent you back to the hotel earlier to get rest for your start. Landon said, Coach, I pitched in a game in high school one day that started at 2 a.m. Well, now he's pitched on really short rest, quite literally. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back in, bringing Ross Dellinger with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live from the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. And following a bat bleep crazy LSU baseball win over Auburn, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game, hanging out at the Taproom River Ranch. Ben Love here, the famous Clint D, keeping me on track from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. An abbreviated hour number one as we got past the aftermath of LSU over Auburn, and now we got a lot of great guests coming up. None better than the man now aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline. He is Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated and SI.com. How are you, Deli?
Good, Ben. How you doing?
Life is good here. How much do you miss being in the Hoover Metropolitan for this week?
there is a part of me that misses it, I'll have to say, you know. And I've had it on my TV the last couple of days, sometimes just on mute while I'm working from the house. But, part of me does kind of miss it. Another part of me would have much rather be in a position that I was last night on the couch with a glass of bourbon at 3 a.m. rather than in the press box having to work. So it's much better to watch it from the couch. But it is kind of a cool event. And in LSU, just, you know, you saw it today. I mean, the things they do there is always so fun to cover. I mean, I think I only covered two SEC tournaments with LSU in 2014 and 2015. In 2014, they surprisingly won it all, beat Florida I think the next year they advance maybe to the weekend in some crazy way. I mean, it's just, it's always, they always do something there. That Maneri magic in Hoover, it's real.
So to confirm briefly, you did stay up until 3 a.m. last night and catch that whole game.
Well, it was 4 a.m. here. So I did not see the end of it. I stayed up through the 16th inning, and then I was like, I've got to go to bed. I think, you know, on the top of the 16th, LSU scored that run to go up 5-4, I think. And then Mississippi State answered in the bottom of the 16th, and that was it. When they answered, I was like, that's it, I'm going to bed. You know, I can't stay up any longer. And, of course, my wife and I went to Mississippi State. So, you know, it was a game, you know, that I wanted to watch. And lo and behold, yeah, I of course, went to bed about 20 minutes before it ended. But I did stay up local time to about 3:45.
What a trooper. And, of course, we're talking with Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. You can and you should read his story that's aboard SI.com right now. With its alcohol policy back up for discussion, the SEC considers joining the party. Ross, as you mentioned in the article, at least 55 FBS programs served alcohol throughout stadiums last fall. What might push the SEC toward joining them in advance of 2019?
Well, this has been something I've written about. You know, actually, the SEC commissioner, every time he sees me, refers to me as a beat writer, or asks me if I'm going to ask him about beer, or, you know, so it's been a long running thing for about at least probably 2.5 years or so of writing about this. You know, LSU pushed for it so strong. I mean, they've been, of all the SEC schools, they've been the one that has, you know, publicly pushed so strongly for it. So, of course, being a beat writer there for so long, I started to cover it. And then for SI, I've kind of kept it going. You know, last year at the spring meetings, I wrote a big story about it. And then, you know, I got word over the last month or so from some administrators in the SEC that it was going to be not just a topic on the agenda or a topic for discussion at this round of SEC meetings, but that it was going to be on the agenda and was going to be the main thing there on the agenda for the president to discuss. So a lot of administrators have a lot of optimism that finally they're at least going to soften the policy. I think, you know, the presidents won't really talk about it publicly, and I've reached out to all of them and kind of basically got a no comment. But a few of the administrators and other people in the SEC will talk about it a little bit, and they seem to be more optimistic than they've ever been. But Ben, everybody shouldn't get their hopes up too much. I mean, this has come up a lot. They've discussed this a lot. The fact that it is an agenda item, and even people on the president's side have told me it is a high up agenda item. It should be a cause for some optimism, but, don't get your hopes up too much, because the presidents, I think they're so apprehensive about, you know, expanding beer sales stadium-wide, even though so many other teams have done it, and they've actually seen alcohol incidents go down because people aren't sneaking and stuff, or they're now binge drinking and tailgating. It makes money for you. It gets butts in seats a little more. Everything seems to be positive about it, but the presidents, you know, we're in the Bible Belt there, and the presidents are still so apprehensive about it. So who knows exactly what's going to happen, but at least they're going to be talking about it seriously.
Ross, I remember tying a storyline from, I think, last summer into this one, and I'll get your opinion on it. And I say this a little bit facetiously, but also somewhat seriously. You went to Mississippi State, so there was a period of time, if I'm not mistaken, where Mississippi was trying to pass a law where you could bring firearms into a stadium. Could you imagine Davis Wade Stadium where you were allowed to not only drink but bear arms?
Yeah, that would not be a stadium that I would want to go to very much in that case, for sure. That sounded like a total left mouth answer as I'm fumbling through English, but I would not. That's something I would not want to see happen. Hopefully, I do remember that coming up maybe last year. I don't think that got passed through, thank goodness, because, I mean, you know, I'm not going to get too political, but I'm a big gun person, and certainly guns in a college football stadium do not belong.
Can't imagine what could go wrong there. Ross Dellinger, SI.com, with us for a few more moments, and I'm glad that you wrote about and brought up the SEC meetings. for my money, Ross, that's usually kind of the steak. And then what happens in a few months, SEC Media Days, is a little bit more of the sizzle, right? So what else is important that could come up in these SEC meetings?
Yeah, you know, the SEC meetings gets kind of overshadowed and has for a while because they don't allow a lot of media there. In fact, they only allow one media representative from basically each outlet. They don't allow really multiples unless you're a big national outlet or something. They don't usually do that. And so really there's only about 30 or 40 media members even present at the spring meetings. And they just, but this is where the big stuff happens. You know, this is where the legislation is passed in the conference in hotel ballrooms with the presidents and chancellors and ADs all meeting. And basically all the media just kind of sits around and waits for them to come out, you know. And they have a couple of press conference availabilities here and there. But it is a very kind of casual event. It's just not attended in masses. They like to keep it small. And so it does get overrated or it gets underrated a little bit, overshadowed by, of course, the big glitz and glamour of media days. But other things, to get back to your question, and other things that will come up, I mean, the transfer portal and the whole transfer stuff will come up. You know, gambling, sports gambling will come up. The injury report thing will come up. You know, the bowl agreements are running up. There's some news that I think a few of us probably have been holding that'll probably just go ahead and, you know, it'll come out there about the SEC bowl tie-ins and in some bowl agreements. Those are things that kind of, you know, obviously playing players, you know, now that we had all that stuff that's come up over the last few days, the whole paying player stuff will I'm sure come up about the name and likeness and image and all that stuff. So those are probably, some, you know, big key things that, I'm looking forward to, as we head into Destin.
I'll get your opinion on one other thing, Ross. I know that these days you're housed out on the East Coast in the Washington, D.C. area, but outside looking in, what's your impression been of Scott Woodward coming into LSU?
Yeah, obviously it's something that's been celebrated in pretty much all the Louisiana LSU community, Scott's addition. He's a Louisiana boy and has deep ties there, obviously, to LSU, worked for LSU during the glory years. I mean, it's kind of a home run if you're a Louisiana LSU person. And, and Scott's ties politically can do nothing but only help LSU, really. You know, his ties politically there are really deep. And, I mean, you saw it, I think it was last week. I mean, they had a big kind of a welcome soiree for him at Carville's house down in New Orleans with the governor being there, and the president of the university and the representative Steve Scalise, I think, was there as well. I mean, you know, that should tell you a lot. This was a political motivated thing, that happened with Joe Aleva and Scott Woodward. It's always politics when it comes to LSU athletics, and this was no different, but, it certainly feels like a home run hire.
We covered a lot of bases, Ross. You know, I appreciate the time. Best of luck to you and your wife out there on the East Coast.
All right, Ben, see you later.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. The guy talked himself into a Les Miles response. I hate that I asked the type of question that could drive a man there, but so be it. That was pretty good from Ross Dellinger. We'll have an opportunity on the other side of this break for you to respond. We'll throw a little shade as well. Don't forget Jeff Horchek sitting in live at the Tap Room from 5:30 until 6 o'clock. And then at 6:15, we take you out to Hoover, Alabama. Glenn Gilbo, the Daily Advertiser, will come on down. One final note for you. 8 until 11, Jones and Hollers are playing here at the Taproom River Ranch. So I know that there's no rhythms on the river. Trust me, there's no problem because you don't have a cover charge here. You just come, listen to the great live local music, and slide into your weekend with us. We'll be right back to the Taproom. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game.
Let's go, people.
Come on, back to me.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
And welcome back. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you. Ben and Clint taking you home on 103.7 The Game. Each and every Thursday, our good fortune to be here at the Tap Room River Ranch. And don't forget, about 10 minutes from now, Jeff Horchek. Only a couple weeks left. You can dig him here in Lafayette before he moves up to Fun Row. He'll be with us 5:30 until 6 o'clock. All right, enough of that. Future talk. Let's get to what's happening now. It's your daily reminder. Really a PSA locally, that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com, check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, and know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. Alex will be the one to put up the shades and awnings while Todd mans the installation of your patio covers in those gorgeous, customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game. And all it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
This might equally fall under the category of shade and, well, just kind of reality. But for the first time since 2007, LeBron James was not on the NBA All-First Team. In fact, he wasn't even on the second. It's almost kind of hard to fathom. LeBron James was a third-team All-NBA performer this season. How's that move to L.A. going? I do know this. The man is, what, executive producing, starring, directing, all kinds of TV shows, movies, who knows, podcasts, stuff on HBO. He seems to be everywhere, Showtime, whatever. He seems to be everywhere. I'm just not sure what's on the court is as important to him right now. I'm sure he would absolutely deny that, categorically. But I'm going to call it like I see it. Third team All-NBA. And so while we almost never look at the results of the team while factoring in whether a player deserves an MVP award, a first or second team All-NBA award, I'm actually going to give some props to the people who made this decision and who voted on this. LeBron played for a god-awful team. He was hurt for a stretch of the season. They ran off at the end of the season the coach, a number of players. There was dysfunction within, and eventually it showed with dysfunction above, in the front office, and even with ownership and management. And so LeBron is in an absolutely crappy situation. And what I'll tell you is, he put himself there. He wanted to go there. He wanted to live out there to start to live life after basketball. And look, more power to him. The guy will make more money in a lifetime than I could ever dream of. His business savvy far exceeds mine. So I'm not hating. He made a decision to set up his future. But as far as the current and the basketball part of things, what was recognized today by those that voted on the NBA first, second, and third teams, it's reality, but it might feel like a little bit of shade as well. CD, before we completely close the ledger today, I went in a little bit on LeBron, but you've got another, and this is just about perfect when it comes to LSU-Auburn.
Oh, it's amazing. You talked about it, the fact that LSU has been able to beat Auburn, the War Eagle, the Plainsman, the Eagle, whatever, the War Eagle, whatever you want to wind up talking about them as. They wound up doing it again today, getting that walk-off win. Remember back in, I believe this was late September, the walk-off field goal for the win to beat Auburn in, I believe it was week three or week four. And then Cole Tracy kind of comes off the top rope with this tweet. Something about walk-offs and Auburn just sounds right. That is just phenomenal stuff from Cole Tracy.
We got to send it into the singing voice and the guy's words, because that's all the shade we got.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PetioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
And, of course, I did see that tweet. It's phenomenal. Just something about walk-offs and LSU-Auburn. And then there's a bit of a split-screen picture of what happened today, the insanity. Once Drew Bianco scored the second run off of a wild boot-scooted pitch. And then, of course, his game winner. It was week three at Jordan-Hare Stadium as LSU beat Auburn in what was probably one of the three or four biggest wins so far in the Ed Orgeron era. At the time, it might have been the biggest win, but what happened not long after that with Georgia, that probably leapt quickly toward the top. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. V, it is good to hear your voice, my brother. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you, Ben?
All
right. Man, you sound like a LeBron hater, man. You're throwing shade at my guy, LeBron. What's going on?
I'm a huge fan of LeBron on the court. I just don't know that this decision was made in the full interest of winning championships. Would you agree or disagree?
I'm a huge fan of LeBron. And I would definitely agree for the first season, maybe two. Well, the first season period. I mean, that's done, that's in the books or whatever. But, and I actually had to Google it, Ben. How can you not vote to win an NBA All-Star game, man? First teamer. If not first, second, okay? Averaging 27, 9, and 8. If that's not All-Star material numbers with no one on your team, literally no one but himself, what is? You tell me who was better.
Right, look, it's fair. And, V, I appreciate it. I keep it going. We got a little feedback going in this background. I don't think I've drifted into the territory of being a LeBron hater, but I'll let you objectively tell me if you think I am or I'm not. I love his skill set. I think he's probably one of the three or four greatest players to ever play the game. I think by the time he's done, the stats are going to show that he's one of the one or two best players to ever lace him up. But I'd certainly put him up there. I mean, in no particular order, my top three for quite some time has included Michael Jordan. I'll give my top four. Michael Jordan, Will Chamberlain, Magic Johnson. And then there's always kind of a push for me to consider some other guys that are kind of right there and adjacent. But you could go with Larry Bird. You could go with Bill Russell, the ultimate winner in all of team sports. LeBron deserves to be right up there in the thick of all of it. And I do mean all of it. But he's made a decision to set himself up for life after basketball. That's the claim that I'm making. Whether or not the Lakers get built back into being a monster with him there, I don't know. Doesn't look like it right now. Am I a hater? I'll leave that for another segment. V, it's good to hear from you, my man. All right, we got to hit a quick break. We'll be back into the Taproom River Ranch. Jeff Horchek sitting in for the next half hour. So buckle up. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Some absolutely funky Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre playing us back in. Ben Love, and for the next half hour, joined by Jeff Horchek of KLFY TV10 for at least a little while. That makes this Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. You hear the background noise, and you know that we're at the Taproom River Ranch and having a great time. All right, Jeff, I can't say that for much longer, can I? Jeff Horchek of KLFY TV10?
No, you can't. Only about another, let me see, five, 6 work days, yeah.
5 to 6 work days.
That's it, man.
Tell me, on a crazy scale, 1 to 10, where did the LSU-Auburn baseball ending rank for you?
Wow. Well, you know, I had some business to take care of, and I got home just in time to watch the ninth inning. So I flip on the SEC Network, and I'm like, let me catch the end of this. It's a tight game, and wow, was I stunned to see how they won. I look up from the kitchen, and I'm like, holy cow, they're going to win in a wild pitch, score 2 runs. Yeah, it was bizarre, but, you know, it's another example of you play till the game, you play till the end. You never give up because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, Auburn had no clue they were going to give up 2 runs on a wild pitch like that, but freaky things happen, and you got to give it to LSU. They were in position to take advantage of that Auburn mistake, and they did, and they won the game. And then coming off of a 17-inning game last night against Mississippi State, I mean, you know they had to be exhausted. But they kept their wits about them, were in position, got runners on, and seized the moment and won in dramatic fashion. So you got to give it to them. But they just seem to – they're finding ways to win.
There are a lot of things that athletically I could say to respond to that, like, wow, the resiliency that it must take. Wow, you know, how much mental fortitude, physical ability. But really all I just heard there is, damn it, I want to be 19 years old again. That ain't hurting their body, man. Are you kidding me? 19 years old?
No, I mean, you're right. They're young bucks. But at the same time, you don't expect to play a 17-inning game in a tournament play game. But that's the way it's set up, you know. You battle, and if you play a game like that, you got to turn around and play again. And they pulled this one out. So now they get a rest because they don't have to play again until tomorrow night. So they should be good to go against either what, Vandy or Mississippi State, the loser.
That's right. So right now we've got Arkansas, Georgia playing a winner's bracket game. And then late tonight, you'll have Vandy, Mississippi State. Right now, respectively, the numbers 2 and 3 seeds nationally. And yeah, the SEC has 4 of the top 6 in the country. So you feel pretty good that the SEC is going to get 4 out of the top 8 national seeds, right? That'll host regionals and then supers if they advance. It's my contention, Jeff, that LSU did enough today to secure a bid to host a regional in Baton Rouge. Just how much of a difference can that make, obviously, playing at home? You've seen it before, whether it's LSU or UL, a home regional can really, really turn the tables in your favor.
Yeah, I mean, LSU's always been one of those schools that, you know, plays well at home. They get that home crowd behind them, and they have such a history of their winning regionals at Alex Box, and then now the new ballpark. I mean, their home base is huge for them. They travel well as well. I mean, they've got a lot of fans in Hoover, but they are money at home. So, you know, you get at home, and again, you know, things click for you. You may get a few breaks as well when you're at home that you don't get on the road, so that could help you. So, you don't want to. You prefer to play LSU at your place. There's no question about it. And you know how that LSU baseball crowd gets. When they start getting a few beers in, they start getting riled up in their chants, and that players feed off of that. So it'll be interesting to see. I talked to Jacques Doucet the other day before this tournament, and I asked him a little bit about, what do you think, Ben? What do you think? Or Jacques, I said, what do you think about this team? I mean, what do they have to do to get to host? And he was just like, you said they win a couple games, I think they're in the driver's seat. So they can win tonight or tomorrow night. They probably in pretty good shape. You think even if they don't win tomorrow night, they still won?
I do. I think if they win tonight, they stamp at home and maybe elevate the stock a little bit closer toward, who knows, maybe the number 14 overall seed, something like that, as opposed to kind of dangling a little bit at 16. Because the thing at 16 is, theoretically speaking, you get the best 2 seed
right
in the nation that's come to your regional. So that's the benefit of continuing to win, right? You firm up that home bid even more so, but then also maybe slightly lessen the competition that comes to town.
Well, I think, you know, the powers that be that vote on those regionals also know that they put a regional in Baton Rouge, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have big crowds.
It's going to draw.
Yeah, and that's what they want. They want butts in the seats. And, you know, if you put a regional at LSU, that's going to happen. So that helps.
No question. I'll go to the other side of the ledger and the other side of the basin, where you and I are, in Lafayette. Ben Love joined by Jeff Horchek of KLFY TV 10. And I want to talk about the Raging Cajuns. And this seems to be a little bit of the elephant in the room. I threw it out there, and it was like the opposite of raw meat with dogs. Nobody wanted to touch it.
Yeah.
With the Cajuns finishing 28-31, a losing record, these things can happen. But it's also now been a couple straight years of not making the postseason. And so I wonder aloud, is it possible that heading into next year, is Tony Robichaux on the hot seat? Or if this happens again, will it get hot after next season? What's your feel for the temperature in Lafayette surrounding a legendary coach? I know it's not an easy conversation, yeah, but I think it's a fair one.
Well, I don't think he's on the hot seat yet. I mean, I remember, I think it was, let me see, maybe about 5-6 years ago. That, it was about 6 years ago that Tony was supposedly on the hot seat, and then he turned around and had end up being ranked number one in the nation at one point in the season. They ended up hosting a super regional against Ole Miss, and that had never happened before. And then all of a sudden, everybody was like, wow. And I said, man, they sure have a short memory. You know, one season, and everybody's ready to throw the axe out on the coach. I don't think he's on the hot seat. I think, you know, the injuries had something to do with it. But then next year, I think, you know, obviously if you have another losing season, then things may start to heat up. things are different now with a new athletic director as well. And, you know, anytime a new administration comes in, that is the whole standard changes. So there's no question that the administration is different with the athletic department, and that's going to play a factor. But I don't see Tony being on the hot seat after this season. Now, if they have another down year next year, then maybe those talks start. I think he's okay going into next year.
It's one of the two flagship programs that I think was always the perception was baseball and softball really carry the weight. And if football could catch up, then, hey, you've got something going. Then not only can you monetize at a high level, but you can move that competitively into another conference. If baseball doesn't hold up its end of the bargain consistently, and to the point you brought up, there's new leadership in charge, I could see there being a change, but I'm with you. I don't think we're within 6 to 12 months of that occurring.
No.
I think it would have to go past that, and there would have to be a feeling that you're not clawing out of this hole.
Yeah, and then you have the new ballpark as well, which they put a lot of money into to help with recruiting. Also, of course, expectations automatically go up as well with that.
That ramps the pressure.
Yeah, it does. So, I mean, you can't say, well, we don't have the facilities now because we have a state-of-the-art ballpark, one of the nicest, if not the nicest in the Sun Belt, and then one of the best in the South. And then you've got hey, we need you to bring in the players, and you got to win. You know, so at some point, you've got to look at that. But I think, like we were saying earlier, I think Tony's okay now. And, you know, with baseball, next year he may have a really great team, and they may make it to a super regional, and everything changes from year to year. And that's the same thing with Paul Maneri. I mean, I heard at some point this year people were like, well, it's time for Maneri to go. I'm like, are you kidding me?
At some point was like 5 days ago.
Yeah. I mean, so fans are always quick to pull the trigger on coaches. They, you know, they forget what you did last year or even last week. And, oh, you know, hey, it's not easy to replace a Paul Maneri or a Tony Robichaud. If there were that many great baseball coaches around, they're not. So it's not as easy as people think. They think, oh, just fire the guy and move on. It doesn't come that easy. Athletic directors have to think about
that. I'll tell you this. I'm right there with you. The other really hard thing to do, Les Miles on the football side, was a great reminder of this. It's really hard to stay somewhere for double-digit years.
Oh, yeah.
And both of these coaches have done it. I mean, it's been a generation plus for Robichaud here in Lafayette. But Maneri, I believe this is year 13, I want to say. That's so hard to do in the modern era.
And in LSU, you know, the standards were set so high from Skip that it's hard for anybody to live up to those. I mean, you had Smoke LaVall coming after Skip and clearly did not reach anything close to what LSU wanted. They got rid of him and then brought Paul in, and he got him to Omaha, got a World Series under his belt. But it's been a while since they've been to Omaha, so people are getting antsy. And then Tony got the Cajuns to Omaha as well, and he's been there, but he hasn't been back since. He's sniffed it a couple times. It's not easy to get to Omaha, first of all. People make it out to where it's very easy. It's not. What Skip Berman did was insane. But the whole landscape, Ben, of college baseball has changed since the days when Skip was coaching, and people need to realize that, too. It's much more competitive.
A lot of parity.
Yeah, a lot more parity than when Skip was coaching. There was about 8 to 10 to 12 teams in the country that had a legit shot every year, and everybody else was spitting the wind. Now it's not like that.
You know what's funny about that? There's not only more parity around the country, there's more specifically within the SEC.
Oh, yeah.
And so just in that conference alone, think about what I said earlier in this segment. There are four SEC teams in the top six.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny, I had somebody ask me earlier today, well, this is like what amounts to the quarterfinal round of the SEC tournament? So I guess you could look at it that way. It's kind of complicated because it's double elimination, but sure, why don't we say that? So it probably won't be that good of a team if it's just the quarterfinals. There's like 8 teams in the SEC in the top 25 and 4 in the top 6. You know, there are no easy passes. So, to your point, there's parity everywhere, even within your own conference.
Yeah, and then recruiting's gotten so much more competitive because coaches can find kids all over the place with the internet. Back when Skip was coaching, they didn't have the internet. So, you know, you recruited kids in your state, maybe a few states around, that was it. It's a totally different model.
Looks like we lost Ben Love and Jeff Horchak. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back with more. You're listening to Bumper Sports, of course, right here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, live from the 237 Roof Studios. We're going to try and get them back on when we come back with more after this.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
You know that feeling, Jeff, when you're talking to someone on the phone and, well, the reception goes out and you don't realize it. You just keep talking to them on the phone.
Was that me a few minutes ago?
Have you ever experienced that before?
Oh, yeah.
Bumper to Bumper Sports back in. And, hey, we've got internet at full power at the Tap Room River Ranch. Glad to have you as we take you home on 103.7 The Game. All right, we got lost in the shuffle toward the end there, but that's fine. I wanted to switch topics anyway. We didn't have you here last week. And it was right in the aftermath of the Pels getting the number one overall pick. And so they'll get to select the Dookie in Zion Williamson. Since David Griffin has already selected a Dookie, Trajan Langdon, to be his general manager, I'll get your reaction to everything that's transpired and the fact that the Pels hold all the cards now. What do you think they could do with it?
Well, it's pretty interesting that a few weeks ago, everybody was like, oh, they're going to move this team out of New Orleans, and they don't have any players, and Anthony's a big spoiled baby, and he wants to leave. And yeah, we were going off, and we understandably so, because the organization was awry, and everybody was just mad, and it looked like there's no way we're going to attract players. And now, like you said, they get the number one pick, shock the world, they had, a 6% chance, and now you got a chance to bring in King Zion and save the franchise. And I still don't think they're going to be able to talk Anthony Davis into staying. I may be wrong, but I think he's still got his mind and heart set on leaving. But that's okay. That's okay. If he doesn't want to be here, no problem. You get the best deal for him. You go young with this team. You trade him. You get some more young bucks to go in with Zion, and you build this team up. And Alvin Gentry's going to get another shot at least 1 year to see what he can do. Griffin's going to give him a shot. I kind of thought they would go in a different direction, get a new coach, but they're going to give Alvin another shot with this young crew and see what happens. And hey, there could be a bright future on the horizon for the Pelicans. Just to see how many people bought season tickets after they got the number one pick, that told me that, okay, there's still a basketball fan base in New Orleans, and they want a winner, and they're still interested. That showed that immediately without even drafting it. They didn't draft the kid yet or anybody, but they just won the lottery, and all of a sudden they sold, 30,000 season tickets?
Wasn't that many. No. I think it was about 2,500 overnight.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But still,
it's a lot, though.
Oh, man. Now somebody's going to ask me how many seats that the Smoothie King Center holds. Clint, I'll get you to look that up for me. But I'm going to go out on the limb and say that 2,500 is roughly 7 or 8% of the capacity.
Yeah, I think they hold about 16,000, I think.
Oh, no, more than that.
Is it about 18, 20?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's above 25. That's why I'm thinking it's about 8%. But Clint will tell me. I've been wrong before. It'll happen again on this program.
I think it's under 25.
It'll happen again today. I'll be wrong. But nonetheless, 2,500 is a significant chunk.
That's huge, though. That's huge, yeah. And that shows you that there's an interest, that people still are interested in the team, and they want to see some young talent. I mean, and then there was all this propaganda thrown out there by a lot of the national media guys. That Zion doesn't want to play in New Orleans. He wanted to be in New York, even though all the media seemed to want him in New York or L.A. And I'm like, we haven't heard from the kid himself. Let him talk. You know, he's trying to digest all this. He's only 18. He ain't even 19 yet, and he's trying to digest where he may be living the next 8 to 10 years.
You know, to your point there, I'll tell you what kills me. I feel like I was born a generation too late. In this modern era where there are cameras and cell phones everywhere and you see every reaction, apparently the first reaction people saw was Zion looked upset.
Yeah.
But there immediately were other reactions where the kid was like laughing it up and slapping his buddy who went to Duke, R.J. Barrett, on the knee and all that. So it always slays me when we play that game.
Well, I mean, it's just I have to agree with Charles Barkley on something he said the other day about how it's good for the NBA to be able to have stars in these small markets like Milwaukee with the Greek Freak, and you see what they're doing, and then in New Orleans to get a guy like Zion, all these small markets. It's good for the NBA. Some people want all the stars to be in these major cities. That's not good for the league. You want to have a six-team league, that's fine, but that's not the reality now. You need the stars to be dispersed across the league in order for the league to be strong. So it's not a bad thing that the Pels have the number one pick and they have a chance to land this kid, Zion Williamson, and build from there. But it just kills me how everybody thinks that, oh, my God, he can't be successful there. I mean, are you kidding me?
Let's fast forward to the time that you were right and I was wrong. Clint says that 18,500 is the capacity for the Smoothie King Center. I'm a little shocked at that.
I knew it was under 20 because it's just that. Yeah, I didn't think it was that big, but you know.
So very quick mathematics, by the way, 2,500 season tickets. By the way, that was just overnight.
Yeah.
It's grown since then.
Right, right.
Overnight, you filled 13.5% of your arena.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, I mean.
That's significant.
And they haven't even drafted him yet and haven't made any trades for Anthony either.
Sure.
So this whole complexion, I mean, it's possible. It's very possible that a Pelicans ticket could be the hottest ticket in the state next year. It could be. I mean, I'm not discounting the Saints or
Saints
LSU.
Saints and LSU are going to be pretty darn good.
No, they are. But I'm just saying it could be a really – well, you got to remember, too, you don't hold as many people in the
state.
That's
right. That's right. And you know what? The fact that we're at least having this conversation proves that they're in a little different stratosphere.
Yeah. And listen, you and I, we talked a lot about this when Anthony Davis went AWOL, and we said, hey, you know, can New Orleans support an NBA team and can the state – I said it before, I'll say it again. If you have a good product and you have something for people to cheer for, they'll support it. But if they're looking at garbage every night, they're not going to support it. And that's sports in general. So if they get a decent product on that court, people are going to pay to go see those young Bucks play. They want to see the good basketball.
I hate to say it, but in the NBA, okay, in all professional sports, you have to have two things for attendance, winning and stars.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I think in the NBA, it's stars and then winning. And so even in LA, where the Lakers were terrible this year, they came out to see LBJ.
Exactly.
I think you have to have stars, then winning. If you have stars and winning,
money.
You're going to sell everything you want.
But in order to win, you need stars. I mean, it's hard to win without stars. I mean, not impossible, but it's hard.
You know,
in the NBA, you got to have at least one or two stars.
What a great conversation this leads to, because we could point toward Milwaukee, but they've got a star.
I think they have two.
The Greek Freak will probably be the league MVP.
Yeah. And Middleton's no joke.
Chris Middleton's a hell of a player.
They built around two draft picks, really. And the Pelicans could do the same thing. You build around Zion and maybe another
pick. Well, I'll give you another. All right, so let's look at who's left, right? It's not fair anymore because Portland's been eliminated, so there's three teams left. The odd man out in this conversation is Toronto.
Uh-huh.
They've got a star. They do, in Kawhi Leonard.
And Lowry's pretty decent, too.
But after that, I don't know. In the grand scheme of the league, people like you and me know who Chris Middleton and Kyle Lowry are.
Yeah.
I don't think everybody does.
No, well, I mean, Lowry was an all-star, but he's not as big a name, obviously, as a Durant or a LeBron, but he was an all-star. I mean,
sure.
In the NBA, in my opinion, you need three stars to win the championship. You need at least three. You can get away with it, too, but you really need three. I mean, The Cavs had Kyrie and LBJ, and they won. And then if you throw Kevin Love in there, that's three. So you really need three, I think, to really solidify a championship. But two superstars, and then maybe a third guy who's a complimentary star. But you're right. I mean, you don't have stars, you don't win. You got to have some ballers to win. The NBA is built around flash. I mean,
sure.
So that's where the stars come in, too. But Milwaukee's shown you can win with two draft picks and build around. Now they're in a battle now. I thought this series may be over by now, and they're in a battle.
Oh no, they got game five tonight. It's a real battle. Yeah. About 90 seconds left. We're at the end of the hour. Bucket list things for you before you move to Monroe, and maybe it's not even things that you haven't done, just things that you want to do and see again.
Yeah. Well, I need to get out to Old Time Grocery and get another po' boy. That's something I've been saying, Jeff. Get out there, and everybody wants to meet for lunch. So I've got only a few days left to go to lunch with a bunch of people. So
you should have people take you to Old Time every day.
Every day, I mean, eat Old Time for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I'm trying to fit in all these lunches and meetings with people before I leave, which is in a few days. And I don't know. I'm just trying to soak in Lafayette and the culture. You know, I mean, I love this area. I'm not leaving because I don't like the area. I'm just leaving because of a great opportunity. But I love this region. Just want to enjoy everything here, the culture, the people. But I will be back. I'm not moving to Bangkok, Thailand, so I'll be able to get back. You know?
That's good to know.
It's good to know.
You can be back here on Thursday next week? Can we squeeze one more out of you?
That's the plan. That's the plan.
Holy hell. We're going to have some fun with that one.
Time to get some swing wings.
That's right. Eat your swing wings. I'll land this plane. I got about 35 more minutes to go. Don't forget, at 6:15, he just covered LSU-Auburn from Hoover Met. We're going to catch up with him outside of the Birmingham area. Again, that's coming your way in about 20 minutes. Don't go anywhere. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you. It's Thursday. That means we're live at the Tap Room River Ranch, and we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
I don't know what the point of that is.
Hour number three underway. Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Pretty packed house here. Having some fun. Ben Love at the Tap Room. Just had Jeff Voracek aboard for the last half hour. You want to respond to any or all of that? My advice to you? Call my friend, the famous Clint D. 706-0111. We got time for you now, and then we're going to shut the door on you because we got Glenn Gilbo coming aboard in about 10 or 11 minutes live from Hoover, Alabama. We'll get him to recap one of the wildest endings you'll ever see. As LSU takes down Auburn 4-3 in the SEC tournament, the LSU Tigers have advanced. They're going to play the loser of Mississippi State Vandy. The Bulldogs and Commodores play tonight around 8 p.m. LSU and the loser of that game going to get down tomorrow at 6:30. Quickly, I'll do some air traffic control because I think it's important. We're going to air the Astros-White Sox finale from Minute Maid tonight. In about 30 minutes, we'll send you to the Juice Box for Astro Launch. 7:10 is your first pitch tomorrow. I'll have a live show from Minute Maid Park, and we're going right back into the Astros on 103.7 The Game. Except that time around, it'll be Red Sox versus Astros. Chris Sale versus Wade Miley, I think, is the projected starters that I've seen for that one. So how about that? You got a Cy Young Award, a winner, on the mound for Boston. So tomorrow we're going to have the Red Sox versus the Astros on 103.7 The Game. That LSU baseball game for tomorrow only will be on the rewind. So make sure you've got it dialed in now and punch it in. LSU versus either Mississippi State or Vandy tomorrow will be on the rewind. 97.7 FM, 1330 AM in Lafayette, 104.1 in Lake Charles. All right, before we bring on Glenn Gilbo, I'll go back to a tale of really two cities in South Louisiana, separated by a basin bridge, and the fates of their baseball programs today. It went well for LSU. Tigers wild-pitched oft. Can I say that? I know you can walk off. I know you can do all kind of things off. Can you wild-pitch off? I don't know. But they did that to Auburn today. 1-4-3. It was a game that took 3 hours and 1 minute. Why is that important? Because last night LSU played a game that took 6 hours and 43 minutes. Lasted all of 17 innings. So after the Tigers, you thought might be falling flat, lack of sleep, dejected after a 17-inning defeat. After you thought that might happen, they really did answer the bell today. And it wasn't conventional, not by any stretch, but there were very key performances. Right up there at the tip-top for me, Landon Marceau. And to me, he showed that he deserves to be the rubber match guy. He deserves to be your back-up-against-the-wall guy. So when the Tigers advance the regional play, and I do think it'll be in Baton Rouge now, that's the one you go to, in my opinion, for your Saturday start. So Friday, you get by, you beat a four seed with whatever you think is best. And then you do your best in that Friday game to not throw Zach Hess, to not throw Devin Fontenot, preferably not Matthew Beck, but you get through on a Friday against the four seed. And in my opinion, you come with Landon Marceau on Saturday in that all-important winner's bracket game. Because if and when you can advance from there, you've got a stacked deck of pitching cards ready to ride. And Marceau, it was a little hairy in the first inning. Took 30 pitches to get out of it. After that, I believe a total of 52 pitches over his next 5 2/3 innings. So Landon Marceau didn't give up a single earned run today, struck out 5 to only 1 walk. He was exactly what you wanted him to be. And he's what you need moving forward into regional play and potentially beyond. And so LSU, over the last 2 days, I think we can now say safely, has had big pitching performances from Beck and Hess and Fontenot, even Hilliard late last night. Todd Peterson, who got the win in relief today, and as I mentioned, Landon Marceau. Plus, they ramped back up Cole Henry. And so the Tigers right now, not in bad pitching shape. But the only thing that didn't go swimmingly from a pitching standpoint was Eric Walker, who started against Mississippi State last night. 4 innings pitched, 4 earned runs conceded. They'll want better from him moving forward. But I do believe LSU clinched a home regional bid, and I think they've got the pitching in as good of a spot. More people injured and on than hurt and off. First time in a long time we've been able to say that. But the offense backed it up to an extent today. Not quite like the last two games in Hoover. Josh Smith, 2-for-4 in the game against Auburn. 1 run scored, 1 RBI. Giovanni DiGiacomo coming into his own and having a spectacular ride through Hoover, Alabama. He had a 2-run homer to advance the ball game and keep it rolling last night late against State. And today he scored the first of 2 runs off of that wild, wild pitch that got LSU a win. The other thing he did, he didn't just score that run. He also started the bottom of the ninth with a much-needed single. After that, Saul Garza added a single of his own, and then both of them got their inner Charlie Hustle on, took third and then second when it didn't look like that was possible, and that set everything up from there. Drew Bianco came on as a pinch runner for Garza at second, and then you saw Auburn go to the pen. The relief pitcher's first effort went about 55 feet. It was blocked. Second pitch, ditto, about 55 feet. It was blocked but not found. And from there, self-inflicted wounds all over for Auburn. So to call it a wild pitch almost feels like a misnomer. But it certainly was a wild ending. And LSU will live to play another day in Hoover. And I think you can see more baseball in the near future coming to Alec Box Stadium. On this side of the basin, didn't go the way anybody wanted it to. Cajuns fell to Troy 10-7. UL was down 10-3. After 7 innings, mounted a bit of a comeback, but ultimately it wasn't enough. And so this team that lost in heartbreak fashion yesterday, had they won that, wow, they would have been in the driver's seat, would have been in a better spot with pitching, but it put UL in an elimination spot today. And they couldn't stave it off. UL 28-31. To end this 2019 season. Cajuns were 15-15 in SEC play. Are there questions about Tony Robichaux and his job security? I certainly don't think there should be now. But I think the table is set to where that seat could get more uncomfortable next year if they rinse, wash, repeat. Here's hoping that it doesn't happen like that. Here's hoping that they don't completely, for lack of a better way of thinking about it, waste the Hayden Cantrell era. 2 straight years without heading to a regional. Here's hoping that doesn't happen in the kid's junior season. But there's a lot of other talent around him. If it can come together, there's a chance for UL to put a flag back atop the Sun Belt Conference. But if even Steven, 15-15 this year in the regular season, going 1-2 in Conway, South Carolina, that's not going to be the definition of at the top or really even near it. If Robe and company can't get back there, the conversation next year, I think, might become a little more cumbersome. But again, I don't think we're at that point just yet. All right, we've got to take another break. We'll be right back in. Glenn Gilbo, he covered the game. What did he make out of it? And what did Maneri and company have to say when it was all over? We're going to Hoover, Alabama next, and then an audition for the world's shortest segment before you get White Sox at Astros. 6:35 is the pregame show. 7:10 is the first pitch. We will be right back. You're listening to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
What a finish in Hoover. I know it's 3 hours plus since it happened, but we're finally going to take you to Hoover, Alabama. We got to recap it. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Our pleasure to bring back aboard the show, Glenn Gilbo with the Daily Advertiser. How are you, Glenn?
Good. Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'll ask you this. Wilder thing that occurred. A game played last night, 17 innings, 6 hours, 43 minutes until darn near 3 in the morning, or the finish for today's LSU-Auburn game?
Well, I would say the finish of today's game, because you don't usually see 2 runs score on a wild pitch that wasn't even that wild. It was right around the plate. It was just weird how the catcher lost it. And great presence of mind by Chris Reed to frantically wave Giovanni in from third. And then great move by Paul Maneri to put Drew Bianco in as the pinch runner for Saul Garza at second. Saul doesn't score. And Drew is pretty fast, even though he's kind of big. So that was just wild, the way it ended right there. LSU could have won it anyway. They only had one out at the time. But still, to win with a flush like that after such a dramatic loss, like 4, you know, it kind of evens things out for LSU.
And what do you think it says about the makeup of this team and what they might be capable of moving past this tournament in Hoover?
Well, you know, they're fresh out of pitching now. So I think 2 wins is really good. I think they've earned their home seed. They probably did that with the first win. And really, I think they helped themselves by the way they played in the loss to such a highly ranked team as Mississippi State. But, you know, I don't know what they can do tomorrow because they used so many pitchers so much over the first 3 games. But as far as the makeup of the team, you know, it's a typical LSU team. You'd think that the fans would get used to this and realize the season's not over until it's over. And, you know, Maneri has a way of finishing strong and getting the team together. And this is a tough team. You know, they've withstood some injuries to pitchers, some disappointing years by some highly recruited freshmen. But those freshmen are starting to come on now. So this is a hell of a team. You know, if they get a home regional, which I think they will, they have a chance to get to a super for sure.
Talking LSU baseball with Glenn Gilbo. You read him every day in the Daily Advertiser. And Glenn covering LSU baseball right now live in Hoover, Alabama. All right, so you think they've, I guess, secured a spot for home regional, and I would agree with you. What else is left for them in this tournament? Obviously, they've also proven that some of their pitchers are coming back to good form with Cole Henry's getting healthier. What else is left for them to accomplish?
Well, I think, maybe they can work on their offense a little bit. You know, they had a big scoring lull yesterday in the late innings and in the extra innings, leaving runners on base. And they had a big scoring lull today after taking the 1-0 lead in the first. But, you know, this team deserves a lot of credit. They really flushed up. But, I think the great thing about the tournament is the reason Skip wanted to win in this tournament was not to win it, but so he could work out his pitchers. And they've already done that a lot. You know, now maybe they need to throw some arms out there that you don't see much and see what they can do. You know, it's never too late to discover a pitcher. I never forget the first time Chad Ogier really pitched in a big game was in the NCAA regional at Collins Station in 1989. And then obviously he became one of their best pitchers ever over the next couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see who he pitches tomorrow.
Well, what was the word from Paul Maneri and this staff after what we witnessed today? What are they saying about some of the options for tomorrow?
What's that?
I guess what did they say after the game today, Glenn, about who might be able to pitch tomorrow?
Oh, he didn't know. I mean, he just flat didn't know. He said he might pick his name out of a hat. I think you probably see Devin Fine know. I think Zach Hess may Zach Hess isn't going to pitch. He threw a lot last night. I think you'll see Devin Fontenot and some of one of the pitchers today, Aaron George. You'll probably see him. Possibly could see Todd Peterson in a closer role tomorrow. So I think that's two or three of the main ones right there.
I marveled at something that you tweeted out after the game, Glenn. This is now 8 straight years where Mannary and LSU have won at least 2 games in the SEC tournament. What do you attribute that to? Why has this been such an important tournament for Mannary during his time in Baton Rouge?
Well, I think Mannary's teams always get better late in the season, and the SEC tournament's late in the season, and he's getting his team together. He's getting his pitchers together, and the younger players are coming around, and LSU just knows how to, they have a history of clutching up when it's time to. I mean, basically, they've been doing that since 1986, like no other program on the campus. And it happens every year. I think they're just the best program in the league. Consistently, they've won more SEC titles than anyone in recent years. They don't have a bad season, like a sub 500 season. They haven't had one of those since 2011. Whereas, Florida's below 500, Vanderbilt was, just about every other school. When they have an off year, they really have an off year. Whereas when LSU has an off year, they kind of, make it 15-15 last year. So they just know how to turn it on at the end, and they know how to do it in the SEC tournament because they just get better as the season goes on.
Glenn, I've had a number of good times in Birmingham, in particular, adjacent to SEC Media Days. What's it like with the media contingent tonight? Anybody hitting the town in Hoover, Birmingham?
Oh, I think so. Last night, most of us didn't get finished right until around 4:30 or 5, so there was nothing to do last night. So yeah, we're gonna have to go see the town tonight now that LSU's going to be here at least one more day.
There you go. Hey, we appreciate you coming on with us, Glenn. Keep up the great work. We'll be following at the Daily Advertiser.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Glenn Gilbo, live from Hoover. It kind of sounded like he was at the ballpark still. Maybe he's watching Arkansas, Georgia. If he is, he's now watching a tied game, 1-1 in the bottom of the 7th. It was my hope that I might catch him heading into a restaurant/bar. And maybe at some point in the not-too-distant future, that will be the case. So, again, our thanks to Glenn Gilbo. All right, don't forget, there is no Rhythms on the River tonight. But it's still a hell of a crowd here at the Tap Room. And maybe it's because they know that the spring cocktail menu is in full effect. Maybe it's because they know Jones and Hollers will be in the building tonight, 8 until 11. There's no cover charge. Just come and enjoy yourself and start your weekend a bit early. All right, one thing I will tell you, because our next segment, it is an awfully, awfully short one. We mainly get in and then we get out. We got about 2 minutes to do that. And, Clint, I'll get you involved here. We had some fun last year when B2BS was live from Minute Maid Park. I can honestly tell you, it'll be fun this time around, but there's a bit of intrigue and mystery for me. Outside of Richard Justice, Reed Ryan, who's agreed to come sit in live with us again, overlooking the stadium, I don't know who else is going to be on the program yet. Last year, Will Harris was set up. I was told, we'll get him early. Interviewed him in the first base dugout. It was the bomb. We did that long before the game. Really good time sitting down with that guy. And as memory serves, he's got some roots in the Eunice area. It was really cool. I don't know who, as far as players, will be on tomorrow, but I can tell you that we will have multiple players. So that was the assurance that I was given. So yours truly will take it down to the locker room scrum, see if we can't come out with some of the people we know that you want to hear from. And I can tell you again that I will effort Alex Bregman. But, Clint, I'll give you to give your official early prediction. I'll get you to put percentages on it. 1 to 100, 100 being, yes, it's going to happen. What percentage chance do you give me of landing Bregman tomorrow?
I go 50% because I feel like he's a guy that either he's going to do it or he's not. It probably just depends on the mood. If they win tomorrow, I'd say yes.
Well, what do you mean if they win tomorrow? I'm going to be there before the damn game tomorrow. You mean if they win tonight?
Tonight, yes. That's what I meant to say. Excuse me.
If Alex Bregman is that much of a wizard to where he can foretell that they're going to win against Chris Sale and the Sox tomorrow night, and so that tells him he should do the interview with me, then God bless him. I'm going to put the percentage at a lot closer to 20%
okay,
on Bregman. I'm just a realist. I mean, at my core, that's what I am. But I have a couple of other guys in mind, and I'll just leave you with this Hint. My understanding is Wade Miley is pitching tomorrow. That leaves a couple of other really, 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 really good pitchers. One that has won Cy Youngs and one that could this year. I'll see if I can't find them tomorrow. So we're knocking on wood here at the Taproom River Ranch, but tomorrow we'll be live from Minute Maid Park, and it'll be a little bit of player roulette. You got to tune in tomorrow at 4 to see exactly who we're going to land. All right, I need to land this plane. We'll be back. World's shortest segment audition. Don't go anywhere. We're bridging the gap between now and the White Sox-Astros finale before the Red Sox come to town. Same type of socks. The colors just change, baby. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back to the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
NBC Sports Radio Update starts now.
About an hour away from tip-off of Game 5.